This episode of the Driven Engineers podcast is sponsored by Kingsbridge Insurance.
Welcome to this episode of the Driven Engineers podcast by Matchtech Recruitment. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by a truly inspiring guest. Our guest is an incredible advocate and force within the motorsport community, and her work has had a huge impact in promoting diversity, equity, and inclusion. She's actively involved with AFBE, the Association for Black and Ethnic Minority Engineers, where she champions representation and support for underrepresented groups in motorsport. In addition, our guest is a powerful voice for the LGBTQ plus community, consistently working to make the industry a more inclusive place for everyone. If that wasn't impressive enough, she's also co-creator of a popular Instagram and TikTok series that shares the realities of life, love, and work in engineering with a creative twist and infectious energy. I'm delighted to welcome to the show today Maya Rowe Sampson. Maya, so I've given you a little bit of an introduction there, but I think it's always nice for our guests to introduce themselves in a little way. I wondered if you could just explain to our listeners who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so I'm Maya, and my full-time job is that I am a program lead for AFBE, which means that I essentially manage schools programs to get kids from underprivileged backgrounds into engineering or STEM in general. And yeah, we're lucky to have received some funding from Mission 44, which is Sir Lewis Hamilton's charity. So the program we're currently managing is all to do with motorsport, which is really cool. I'm an ex-science teacher, which is how I got into that. I've had a very like weird career. And then on the side, me and my wife make content on TikTok and Instagram about motorsport. It's kind of just our hobby, but yeah, it's got quite big, and so we do a lot of work with Racing Pride, which you kind of alluded to, and yeah, that's just something that we do for fun on the side. So I kind of, yeah, a bit of everything around motorsport, but yeah, mostly working with young people is what I do.
That's great. My youngest child is really interested in your TikTok at the moment, because I've, as any good podcast host, they do a little bit of research into who they're talking to, and All of a sudden I just found her scrolling through your content. She absolutely loves it. So we'll get onto that a little bit later on. But one thing I really want to sort of start the show off on is talking about AFBE. So we at Matchtech Recruitment, we're partnered with AFBE, but I wondered if you could just explain in your own words to the listeners that don't know who AFBE are, exactly what they do and who they are and what things they are doing in the communities.
Yeah, so AFBE is essentially a network of ethnic minority engineers. That's how it started. And our aim is to provide support for anybody who comes from an ethnic minority background that is interested in engineering, works in engineering, or is looking to get into leadership positions. So it's kind of like an end-to-end support network. I work at the younger end of the spectrum with young people, but yeah, it's the network for any ages. And yeah, we do lots of talks. We have lots of networking events and run loads of schools programs throughout the country.
So what drives your own personal passion for wanting to increase representation within the motorsport industry, Maya?
So I'm actually quite a new motorsport fan, comparatively. So it was basically my wife and I got into loads of sports during the pandemic because there was absolutely nothing else to do. So I kind of got into it like 2020-ish. And very quickly realized that it was like, in terms of like the landscape, was the diversity was way worse than anything I've ever seen before, which at the time, you know, I was working in a secondary school that was like predominantly like it was an all-girls secondary school, predominantly like people from like an Afro-Caribbean background. I was like so interested in the sport, found it so interesting, and used it a lot when I was teaching, and it was like a shame that none of these people could see themselves in that sort of role. And then as we started to make more content, yeah, we just kind of, it wasn't even on purpose. It's just existing in that space. Sometimes you become an advocate for diversity just because you are diverse. And so, yeah, I got more and more interested. And then as I read more and more, I was like, wow, there's something that really needs to be addressed. And working for AFBE, I realized that it's actually just a industry-wide problem in engineering, to be honest. So yeah, it's a space where, particularly in motorsport, because the landscape of the fans have changed so much recently, there's a lot of people that are very interested in making things better. So it's quite a exciting place to be working at this period of time. And you can do quite a lot because it's a small space, rather than feeling like you're working towards something that you don't actually have any control over.
So your introduction to motorsport then, where did it come from? Did it come from your partner? Did it come from somewhere else?
Yeah, it did come from my partner. So we actually got into the NFL first. That was like our first pandemic sport. I don't even know why. I don't know how that happened. But anyway, I think they were probably the first sports that came back during the pandemic. And then her friend got really into Formula One and then was just trying to like convince everyone to get into it. And it worked because everyone did. And then it was just on in my house. So I just had to get with the program because
join them or be against them. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. And then when I realized how linked to like science and technology it was, then I was hooked really.
That's really good. Do you have a team that you support?
I mean, it changes a lot. So for different reasons. So technically we got into F1 through our Dutch friend. So obviously we're like, it's very easy to be a Max fan right now. But then obviously from like a, I guess from a driving perspective, I think I'm an Oscar Piastri fan. But yeah, I think it's easier to be a driver fan than a team fan because teams can just let you down and break you. So yeah, I think that's probably
absolutely. No, that's great. What can companies do better to ensure that different people thrive when they come through the door, especially those from disadvantaged backgrounds?
Yeah, I think, I guess like from personal experience, I think trying to ensure that everybody understands what different groups of people need. I think that there's often a fear to be like explicit about explaining, oh, this group of people might not want you talking about this. Or like, I have an anecdote that I worked for an amazing company, but it was super, super white because it was marketing and that's just how it goes. All of the girls were always talking about fake tanning, like all the time. And it's something, and it's completely harmless. Ultimately, they're lovely people, but it's like, okay, well, I'm completely excluded from this conversation. And it's like, they don't mean to do it, but then you feel excluded from like all of the, all the conversations. So like, I think it's something that we talk about a lot is like microaggressions that people don't mean to be doing. And really addressing those explicitly, I think is really important. And then obviously there's like really big things that people can do, like making sure that their recruitment process is fair, which I think is a huge problem in motorsport, and providing people, different people will need different training opportunities. It needs to be like an approach that looks at every kind of aspect of the business and ensuring that it gives every person the opportunity to grow into leadership positions. I think it's very like obvious, particularly in engineering, that you might have a diverse company and there might be lots of people who are working like in entry level positions. But if you've only got white men in leadership positions, then you're doing something wrong. So yeah, it has to be a very whole company approach, which is why people like AFB exist, so that we can actually help you, because there's a lot to consider.
In the short time that you've been involved in that, are you already seeing an improvement? Or do you think we've still got quite a long way to go?
I mean, because of where we started, I think there's always going to be like a long way to go. And actually, there's like less women in engineering than there was when I started in the UK. It dropped this year by like 0.6%, which is not huge, but it's still, considering it was only like 12% anyway. So I think that particularly in motorsport, there are a lot of young, diverse young people who are interested in working in this field. Whether they're getting those jobs, we get to see, because they're young and they're pre-internship, pre-anything. So I guess we'll see in a couple of years whether that actually translates. I don't think I've seen any improvement, but we definitely have seen improvement in the pipeline, which is kind of how, the only thing that can make any difference.
Would you say that it's fair to say that at the moment it's more about making companies aware and making them, bringing it to the forefront of their mind when they're going through recruitment processes and they're going through changes and roles in staff? Is it just bringing that awareness to the forefront of their mind at the moment?
Yeah, I think so. And convincing them that it's actually important, which I think it's a hard sell, because maybe not in all engineering, but in motorsport in particular, they're always going to fill those roles because people want to work in motorsport. I was actually talking to someone who said that's true for like F1, F2, but F3 and F4 have like huge problems filling roles. So actually they're more inclined to care more about diversity because they need to fill roles. But yeah, I think convincing them that it's a worthwhile thing to invest in is really difficult. And then I think people get the wrong idea that increasing diversity means that people from underprivileged backgrounds will, you know, get jobs they don't deserve, or you're not going to get the best people in roles and things like that. But changing practices to mean that it could be the best person for the job, but they don't have sports experience, because it's really hard to get sports experience, it doesn't mean that they're not necessarily as good as the candidate who might have had like an uncle that worked for Mercedes or something. So
yeah,
convincing people that it's important, I think that's the challenge, and something that I find quite frustrating when I talk to F1 teams. I don't think there's proper buy-in.
Yeah, no, that's, and I think I agree with you as well with that. Obviously, we recruit for a few Formula One teams, and we do see it. There's nothing in particular that's kind of happening, but I think there could be a lot more to bring to the forefront of their minds when they're going through that process. I've got two young daughters, and you know, nothing would make me prouder than to see them in motorsport when they're older. How can we inspire young women to consider a career in motorsport? You mentioned there was a drop off this year in terms of females in engineering, but what can we do to just inspire them to go and give it a go?
Yeah, I think obviously there's loads of amazing initiatives, like things like Girls on Track, which is huge, that's run by Motorsport UK, that provides opportunities for girls to see what motorsport is all about, kind of inspire them. But I think that we need to show that motorsport is a really cool way to do science. It's a place where, you know, you can be really innovative, you can have a really like long career, things like that. I think the best way to kind of really encourage girls to get into motorsport is by making them really resilient, and by making them think that they can maybe be the only woman like in a room, and make them think that that's a cool thing to be, because the next generation, it's still going to be a situation where you might be the only woman like in a space, and understand it that you have something different to bring, especially in motorsport, because it's all about creativity, and that's a strength, I think, is really important, because it's all well and good showing the role models, but if the role models don't exist, then you need to have girls who are really strong-willed.
Resilience in any industry, I think, is key as well, no matter what industry you're working in. So you have a rich background in science education. You mentioned it earlier that I think you were a science teacher at a school previously. How does that passion for teaching translate into the work that you're doing now?
Yeah, so I used motorsport a lot when I was teaching. I would bring in examples when I was teaching physics, which can obviously be quite boring, or people think that it's quite boring. It's not actually boring. And so I kind of already knew which aspects of motorsport I could use to kind of bridge the gap between an understanding of a career and what people were learning in class. And in my role with AFBE, I deliver all of the sessions to the young people. So I go into schools and I'll teach about one aspect of motorsport. So for example, we have a session on data analysis in motorsport, which I don't think I'd be able to do if I hadn't been a teacher. So it's like knowing the level that they can kind of understand, because I think that a problem with outreach is it's usually way above kids' heads, and because people forget how little you knew when you were 12. So understanding, right, okay, if we're going to do data analysis, we can literally only look at speed. They don't know any other metrics, things like that. So I think that's really helpful in terms of, yeah, really making sure that things are on the right level. And yeah, we do a lot of, well, I do a lot of explainers on social media. So yeah, I'll explain what happened in a race. And it's obviously, it's not geared towards kids, but it is, being able to explain things in a way that people will understand. And I think actually, to be fair, people don't have like the knowledge that even, I think sometimes I'm listening to, if I watch Sky, sometimes I think that the level that they're explaining things are way too high. They expect people to be way too interested in motorsport. So, understanding how to explain things is very important, I think, and if you're making content as well.
Yeah, really good. That's one thing I discovered quite quickly doing motorsport recruitment is some of the jargon used and some of the systems and software that they use. It was just mind-blowing, some of the things they talk about, especially around, like you said, data. They data for data for data, basically. But it's really interesting. And I think you're right, making sure that we can deliver that in a layman's kind terms that people can understand and can relate to can make it a bit more beneficial and worthwhile, I think. Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit more about the on-track initiative then. So can you just explain a little bit more about what the on-track initiative is and how it connects students with both education and motorsport?
Yeah, so I've done a little bit of work with a company called Aspire. They have an initiative called STEM on Track, which I filmed some content for them, and it's really cool. They basically get like a kit cart, but they get everything in pieces. And the idea is that every week they build a little bit more of the cart. And then along with that, there's a lesson, essentially, where they'll learn, okay, this is what this piece is, this is how you build it, this is the tools you're using. And then there's a section that I think either I or another guy who's an engineer filmed, which explains how this relates to motorsport or how this relates to what they're learning in class. So yeah, it's really cool. And yeah, this is year one. It's in like 50 schools, which is really cool. And hopefully the idea is that, yeah, they get interested in motorsport, but it's related back to what they're learning.
So how do you juggle your various roles from content creator, Ignite program manager, while sort of continuously trying to innovate and stay passionate about your work? Juggling both of those roles must be quite difficult.
Yeah, it can be. I think something that, not that I find frustrating, I don't know. So the content stuff isn't actually my job. So I can like let it slack if we're busy at work. It helps that there's two of us. It helps that we both work from home most of the time. So for example, it's not relevant this weekend because it's Mexico and everything's super late, which I'm not looking forward to. But sometimes, you know, if free practice is on Friday during the workday, usually FP1 is during the workday. So we can like take our lunch break at like 3 o'clock instead to make sure we can watch things. Something happens, one of us can always like jump on and do a very quick video, which means that it doesn't really disrupt our actual work because, yeah, it's super flexible. And yeah, my role with AFB is incredible. It's super flexible. I can kind of work my hours whenever I want. And because I tend to be a very early person, if I start working at like 7 a.m, then I get everything done really quickly. So yeah, having a flexible role really helps. When we started making content, I was still teaching, which I shouldn't have done. You're not meant to really have a social media presence when you're teaching, but no one found out, so it was fine. That was hard because I was literally like on the bus back from work and I'd been like talking all day and I was like, oh my God, I need to make a video when I got home. And that was exhausting, but it's fine now. I can be flexible. And yeah, I think doing it with someone else is really important because yeah, you can always have the other person jump in. Or like, for example, if I have time to film but not edit, that's fine because I can pass it on. So
how many followers are you up to now?
We have 29,000 on Instagram and 21 on TikTok. TikTok is not for us. We're too old for TikTok. Honestly, it's just, yeah, we don't understand it sometimes. We're like, yeah, it's just the content has to be much less polished than on Instagram. And it's just, yeah, like pick up a phone sort of content. And sometimes I'm like, but this video isn't good. So, yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, so what's next for you then in terms of expanding your work, both in motorsport and through AFBE? Have you got any exciting projects lined up?
Yeah, so I haven't been with AFBE for that long. This is like my third month. So as well as the schools program, which is kicked off and we're fully doing, we're working with schools in Birmingham mostly this year. And so we want to expand our presence for engineers kind of in the Midlands, because an area of the country we haven't spent a lot of time in. So yeah, giving them opportunities. There's a lot of students who are working with us as volunteers who would love to like have the opportunities to meet people who work in motorsport So that's something that I'm looking to facilitate just through some like networking events, which is, you would think it would be simple to organize, but it's not when you're trying to talk to F1 teams. So yeah, just providing a space where we can kind of give back to the volunteers that are helping us with the schools programs. And yeah, really kind of, I want to make F1 teams cooperate with each other a bit more, essentially. That's, which we can do because we're neutral and we have lots of partners kind of within that space. So yeah, that's what's kind of next. That's what I'm putting all my effort into.
Oh, that's really good. What specific challenges have you faced then in your own efforts to diversify STEM education in motorsport or in your teaching role, and how have you tackled?
Yeah, I think because of the way that the science curriculum is set up, I'm not a fan. I don't think it's very good. It prevents people from understanding what a STEM job actually is. So a big part of what I'm doing is making sure that kids know that when we're analysing a graph of like Carlos Sainz doing a lap around Monza, that that's actually what you're doing in maths, and trying to link that. I think that's the biggest issue, because it's actually why these jobs tend to be so undiverse, is because if you go to a school where you've got loads of opportunities, you're doing loads of extracurricular programs, maybe you're more likely to have some parents in the class who work in STEM to give them more of an idea of what the job actually is. You're more likely to understand what it takes, and the fact that it's not just like sitting. People just think it's like scientists and lab coats. They still think it's that, which it absolutely isn't. Even when I worked in research when I was way younger, it was not like scientists and lab coats. So it's just getting kids to really understand that STEM careers are really varied and exciting.
So what do you think are the biggest barriers in STEM when it comes to representation? I mean, you did mention earlier on that it's quite important to bring to the forefront of people's minds during the recruitment process, but what other barriers are there?
In terms of like getting people from like a degree into a job, sort of that sort of phase, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
So I would say that employers need to be mindful that if somebody comes from a less privileged background, their CV is going to look a bit different in terms of the opportunities they will have had. And to be creative in how they might assess someone, because if I wanted to do work experience when I was younger, it had to be paid, otherwise it wasn't happening. And that's the case for so many people. And it's actually getting worse with the cost of living crisis. So to be aware that if somebody has work experience that looks completely irrelevant, it was probably because of that. And to pay their interns, to pay their apprentices. If you can't afford to pay an intern, you shouldn't have one. It's kind of my mentality. So that would make a huge difference. And little things like travel grants. So people from underprivileged background tend to be from cities. Formula One teams, motorsport teams are not in cities. They're in the middle of nowhere. Somebody doesn't have a car. How do they get to it? Like, do you have a carpool system? So yeah, I think that would make a huge difference, even physically being able to get there, because there's so many geographical barriers. And if you don't come from an underprivileged background, you don't know that those things are a problem. And I think it's just, yeah, lack of knowledge that these things can affect whether you can apply for a job somewhere.
Say somebody from a disadvantaged background did manage to secure a job within motorsport or in the industry. What can companies do better to like ensure that these people thrive when they do come through the door?
Yeah, I think acknowledging that things might not be perfect is really important. I think we know that companies are not perfect, and it's annoying if they kind of sweep that under the rug and kind of pretend that they are. I think that's the most frustrating thing. And that has to come from like line managers. So line managers checking in and kind of obviously being allies. So yeah, talking about issues or showing that they've read about it, or, you know, that they're interested, I think is a really easy thing that can make people feel like they're not insane if they feel a bit out of place. And making sure that they provide just really good training for like the entire team, acknowledge that people might need different training to retain them.
That's great. No, that's really good advice. And for any companies listening, I think they just take one or two of those pointers on board. It would just make for a better workplace. So with millions of monthly viewers on Instagram and TikTok, You mentioned TikTok's not for you, but I can't imagine you stopping it anytime soon. How do you maintain making sure that your content is some education, but also keeping it entertaining as well at the same time? How do you kind of find that balance?
Yeah, it's been trial and error, really. I found a format that definitely works for me now in terms of like how long things should be, understanding that you can't really say very much and that's okay. And because there's two of us and my partner's like much more about like all the comedy stuff, a lot of our videos are just there for entertainment. And I guess like social media gurus will always say you should have like some entertaining content, some educational and some inspirational content. I don't really agree with the inspirational stuff because I think it makes you unrelatable, but you have to have a mixture. And if you look and see accounts that are just educational, they don't do as well. And also you can't be educational all the time. So yeah, you have to be aware of what your content's doing. I think in motorsport, it's very different to if you're trying to run another social media account, because you can't really plan your content because you don't know what's going to happen in the race. So we just have to be aware that after every race, we'll do one analysis, we'll do a comedy like edit and like a skit for everything. And then anything else that happens, we'll add in, but trying to make sure things are balanced no matter what happens. But some weekends are just like pure comedy. It's great.
Who's the creative genius then? Is it you or your partner?
No, it's my partner. I'm the scientist. She's actually a professional video producer, which helps.
Absolutely. What does the future look like for your platform then, your social media content? What are you going to be expanding over the next 12 months?
Yeah, so we definitely try to keep some series, they're not proper series, but you know, some series going that happen every race week, which I'm much worse at than my partner. She's amazing at something she's been doing for like 2 years. But we know right now. So we've been making content about the drivers that we cared about, basically. And you can't do that. You have to kind of branch out. So yeah, that's what our aim is for next season. And we also want to, now that we have an audience and a lot of them are quite invested, we want to expand to other motorsport series. So we did... Obviously, we do talk about like Formula 2, Formula 3 because it's related. But we've done some work this year with Formula E, which is a super exciting series because they're trying to be super sustainable. And because they're innovating so quickly, it changes quite a lot from season to season. So that's something that we want to do a lot more of next year. Also, they're like a much more diverse series, not in terms of the drivers, obviously, but in terms of who's actually working on the ground. When you go to a race, it feels much more diverse, much more accessible, and something that we want to put our time into because it does not get the attention it deserves. So, branching out is what we're trying to do. But sometimes we just get caught up and we're like, sometimes I just won't even know what the Ferraris did during a race because I wasn't interested. And it's like, oh, they came there. Okay, I can't talk about that. But so, yeah, trying to watch it with more of a, like, this is my job sort of mindset rather than just for enjoyment purposes.
Absolutely. No, that's great. Obviously, we've got Mexico this weekend. I think probably by the time the podcast comes out, we'll probably be getting ready for the race after that. Las Vegas is in a few weeks as well. Where, just your thoughts, and it'd be really good to get your input. Where do you see the season heading? Who's gonna end up on top? McLaren, Red Bull? Can Ferrari get in there? What's your thoughts?
I think it's going to be McLaren, Ferrari, Red Bull.
Do you?
I think, yeah. I think Max is going to win the Drivers' Championship, almost. I would put money on it because I don't think Lando's got it in him. But, and neither does McLaren, actually. They've really messed that up. But the, Ferrari's going to overtake Red Bull because, no offence to Checo, but he can't score points.
he's struggling, isn't he? He's really struggling.
Yeah, it's really bad. Like, George Russell finishing above him in the last race is really bad because he started from the pit. So yeah, it's a shame from Red Bull. But people have been saying that at least it means they get more wind tunnel time, which is true. So pros and cons.
And next season's already looks like it's going to be just as competitive. There's been a few movements already. Adrian Newey to Aston Martin, Lewis obviously, Ferrari. We might see some more movements in the break, but your thoughts for next year? Who's going to come out on top? I know it's early days, but who would you like to see
I have no clue. I'm very interested in, obviously I'm interested to see how Lewis does at Ferrari. That's so exciting. And how that works out with Charles being like, they're going to have two number one drivers, which is, they already kind of have, but I think next year there's going to be some fights about that. I hope there is anyway. And yeah, I hope Lewis performs really well. And I'm really interested to see how McLaren deals with their two number one drivers, because if they don't nurture Oscar, he's going to leave. So that's really interesting. And yeah, I really hope Checo is not in that rebel seat. So there's two competitive drivers in that car as well. And then Kimi Antonelli. Let's see how that goes. I'm concerned he's going to crash a lot. Yeah, because we watch F2 quite closely and he hasn't had the best season. So I'm sure he is an incredible talent, but it's very soon to put him in a Mercedes. So
let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens. One final question for you. One I like to ask all of our guests on the podcast. What words of wisdom can you give to any aspiring young engineers who are trying to make it into motorsport or any of the formulas?
I would say that you have to really throw yourself into kind of any opportunity that comes about, because it might not be what you expected, but yeah, it could be an incredible opportunity that gets you to meet amazing people and take you down a slightly different path that you weren't expecting. And yeah, there's not endless opportunities in motorsport, so take them when they come.
That's great. That's really good advice. And finally, do you want to just let the listeners know how they can follow you on Instagram and TikTok? What's the name of your platform?
Yeah, so we are Mania On Board. So it's our first name squashed together and then On Board. Mania like you're crazy. All one word on TikTok and Instagram. And YouTube, but YouTube is a bit dead, so don't bother with that.
Excellent. Fantastic. Maya, I really appreciate you taking the time out today. I know you've had a really busy schedule recently, but we really appreciate you taking out the time to talk to us about what AFBE do, what you're currently up to. Just want to thank you, and I'd love to stay in touch, and we'll talk to you again in the future, hopefully.
Yes, thank you for having me.